Welcome to the Jukebox Podcast from WP Tavern. My name is Nathan Wrigley. Jukebox is a podcast which is dedicated to all things WordPress. The people, the events, the plugins, the blocks, the themes, and in this case, how to keep your WordPress website secure. If you'd like to subscribe to the podcast, you can do that by searching for WP Tavern in your podcast player of choice, or by going to wptavern.com/feed/podcast, and you can copy that URL into most podcast players. If you have a topic that you'd like us to feature on the podcast, I'm keen to hear from you, and hopefully get you, or your idea, featured on the show. Head over to wptavern.com/contact/jukebox, and use the form there. So on the podcast today, we have Robert Abella. Robert is the CEO and founder of Mellopress, formerly known as WP White Security. They make niche WordPress security and admin plugins. He has over 18 years of experience in the IT and software industries and has written numerous web security articles and white papers. We all know that your website is potentially under attack 24 hours a day, 365 days of the year. But why is that? And what can we do to mitigate that risk? Robert talks about the security of WordPress Core and how it's matured over the years. He feels that in most cases, it's not the core of WordPress that you need to be concerned about, rather the array of plugins and themes which are added on top. The unique cocktail of software that you add to your site makes it challenging for security products to secure it. That being said, Robert is optimistic that there are strategies you can adopt which will make your site less likely to fall prey to malicious actors or bots. Updating plugins on a regular basis, keeping fresh backups, and the monitoring of logs all play a vital role and are straightforward to do. Robert is also at pains to point out that this is not a one-click or one-time fix. You're going to need to dedicate time and resources to your website security, and those resources and time will need to be increased as the importance and reach of your website grows. Evolution is the key here. What worked yesterday might not work so effectively tomorrow. Another topic we touch on is the automated nature of many of these attacks. Unless you're hosting a website of some importance, hackers are not trying to break your specific website. They're deploying automated attacks, trying to infect many websites at the same time. But why do they do this? What are the motivations of these bad actors? Robert explains that it's not personal, but that does not mean that you can ignore the threat. We also chat about the many layers which go into making your website work. Typically, you've got a web server, a database, and often much more. And Robert explains why you need to be mindful of all of these when drawing up your security posture. Then, of course, there's the users of your site, the people who you've allowed to have legitimate access to the WordPress admin. If you're in a large company with a high churn of employees, you'll need to make sure that only people who need access have access, and that the permissions that they're afforded are correct for the work they need to do. If you're curious about how you can secure your WordPress website as it grows, this podcast is for you. If you're interested in finding out more, you can find all of the links in the show notes by heading to wptavern.com/podcast, where you'll find all the other episodes as well. And so, without further delay, I bring you Robert Abella. I am joined on the podcast today by Robert Abella. Hello, Robert.
Hello, Nathan. Thank you very much for the invitation. Always nice to talk to you.
Really nice to talk to you. I've spoken to you on various other occasions, so I know who you are, but it occurs to me that perhaps the audience don't. Would you mind just spending a moment giving us a little potted history of yourself, your relationship with WordPress? We're going to be talking about security today, so perhaps that would be a good thing to concentrate on as well. So, Robert, over to you.
Sure. I started when I was 20. I started working for a security software company. And through the process of 10, 12 years, I worked through different number of software security companies. So I was working in security. And for the last company I was working for, we needed a blog. And back then, WordPress was up and coming, basically. So yeah, we started using WordPress. Back then, it was the only viable, very good solution to use. but still it was in its early days. It was around 2011, 2012. So of course, back then security was a big issue. And there weren't the vendors that there are today and the solutions that there are today. It definitely got my interest. So while I was working with the company, of course, we implemented WordPress, but it got my interest. And then I met some people who worked in WordPress. You know, I like the idea of working from home or doing something for yourself. So yeah, it started as a hobby. I started writing about WordPress security and reading a bit more because I was using it for my full-time job. Slowly, slowly, it turned into a part-time, from a hobby into a part-time. And then, yeah, it developed into full-time. And now, yeah, I run a company. It's called WPY Security, which currently, by the way, we are rebranding to Mailopress. And yeah, we develop a number of security and management plugins. We started mostly with security plugins, but slowly, slowly, we're developing also a number of plugins, which kind of like a mix of both security and also user/website management plugin.
Thank you. People who are listening to this podcast, we have a real wide range of an audience. The audience is really broad and deep. And the reason I mention that is because there'll be a cohort of that audience who understand all the ins and outs of security, and there'll be a whole load of other people who realize that security online is a thing, but don't really have any understanding of what we're talking about. So perhaps that would be a good place to lay the groundwork on. Tell us a little bit about the state of WordPress security, if you like. We often hear about a plugin being a fix or a firewall being a fix, or maybe you sign up for some kind of SaaS app and that's the fix. But I'm sure that that probably isn't the fix. There's probably a whole bunch of different security vulnerabilities that we need to be aware of, as well as different ways to fix those. So just paint the landscape of WordPress security, if you like.
Sure. To start off with, we can start with the WordPress core. Many people think that WordPress is insecure, the core, but yeah. If you asked me like 10, 12 years ago, I would have said, yeah, but nowadays, I mean, WordPress in general, the core is a really robust, solid product. So WordPress is not an issue. But of course, WordPress is surrounded, is made up from a huge ecosystems of plugins and themes. And nowadays, of course, there are a lot of different solutions. And most issues usually are either user problems, lack of awareness, or vulnerabilities issues in plugins. But yeah, in terms of security, like it's usually a mix of tools. It's a mix of services, tools, the plugins, for example, or services, or a mix of both, and also best practices. You definitely, for example, if you have a bare-bone WordPress, you need some plugins and services to implement some things and automate, like add two-factor authentication, implement a firewall, automate backups, enforce some policies, for example. That's what the software can give you, but you also need to follow some best practices. You know, like, let's say you have some logs and activity log, you need to keep an eye on those logs. You need to make sure that the software is always up to date. And by the way, when we talk software, many people look just at WordPress, but you need to also keep up to date your own laptop software up to date. Any software you use through the process, your laptop, servers, whatever, everything needs to be kept up to date, not just WordPress. And of course, one thing to keep in mind is, let's say you harden WordPress the first time. Security is not a one-stop fix. It's not a one-time fix because it's secure maybe today, but as we all know, as businesses grow, as requirements change, your website needs to adapt to these changes. So you might need to add new technology, or you need to install a new plugin, or change something, or change the configuration on the server. So with every change or with any new vulnerability that is discovered, make sure that you adapt your security strategy, basically. What we call like the four pillars of security. The idea is, of course, first to secure, harden WordPress, then of course, monitor, keep an eye, of course, on what's happening. Test, just keep on testing whenever you add something new. Is the firewall still working as it's supposed to be? Things like that. Based on the findings, you need to improve. So as the website evolves, as your business evolves, or your whatever you're doing with the website, the scope of the website, and the requirements of your team, security needs to evolve as well. Okay, you install a plugin, you maybe use some services as well, a good mix. You have some best practices in place, but yeah, that's just as of today.
It's a never-ending enterprise, really, isn't it? You are constantly going to have to be tweaking this and examining this because the nature of the software, which WordPress itself sits on top of, the OS, if you like, that's always changing. WordPress itself is changing. The configuration of plugins, themes, and so on that you've got is changing. And also the nature of the attacks which are coming your way is changing. The long and the short of it is the whole thing is changing. And so I guess you need to adapt with that. I just want to switch to the attackers themselves, because I always find this subject curious. What is in it for them? So these days, we constantly see about the latest hack. You know, if you read tech journalism, you're seeing about SaaS platforms going down. You see about ransomware attacks. You see about people's Bitcoin wallets being stolen. And there's just seemingly every which way that people can cause mayhem, they do. But in a WordPress website, why are they doing it? What are the reasons that they're doing it for? I guess we've come a long way from just so that they can deface your website.
I've been listening to this podcast. It's about the Lazarus Group. I don't know if you heard about it. It's from the BBC. Typically, on the scale of a text, the motivation is mostly financial motivation. And okay, of course, like you don't have any source of money or something on your website. That might not be the case. But these type of large-scale attacks, they need a number of bots, basically hacked websites, hacked servers, which they can use to ramp up their attacks, basically. Or, of course, if you want to hide, if you're hacking a website, you're going to hide yourself. You don't want to hack it from your own computer. So you hack a website, you hack another server, and use that kind of like a stepping stone. So as long as you have an online presence, whether it's WordPress or not, you are a target. That online presence, if it's WordPress or not, any website or any device that is connected to the internet, it has resources. It has CPU power, it has memory, it has internet connectivity, bandwidth. So yeah, that's a resource. Now, if it's being hacked either to hack your website and deface your website, or as a stepping stone to hack something else, but yeah, you are always a target. So even if you have nothing of interest, even if you're not doing, I don't know, commerce to your website, and if you don't have sensitive data, you are still a target.
If you have an e-commerce website, obviously there's a real motivation there, you know, possibly break into your website and figure out what kind of orders have been replaced and cause mayhem there and maybe try some sort of social engineering attack to steal people's credit card details. But interestingly there, you also just said just the resources itself, that's enough. The fact that you have paid for a piece of a computer somewhere, a portion of a computer, the CPU and what have you, that's enough for people because presumably they want to put their own software on the computer that you've paid for and use it to do nefarious things. Now, that might be spraying out emails to people who don't wish to receive them. But what other things are they up to? So if they're not defacing things, but they are wishing to take your machine over, what kind of things can they do from there once they've got that bridge established?
They can do quite a lot. For example, there was this, going back to the Lazarus Group, one of the smart hacks they've done, they targeted some bankers, some people who work in banks, basically, with a phishing attack. Quite frankly, it was the good old trick, like, hi, you have won an award, click here to win via email. Someone from all those thousands of employees in a bank, someone clicked, and malware was injected there, and that led to allowing them to control some ATMs and stuff like that. But to get to there, when they managed to inject the malware in ATMs and, of course, control that, they wouldn't control that malware or launch the attack from their own servers, because otherwise it's very easy to track them back. They need some sort of proxies or stuff like that. So basically, they are going to use your website, which is hosted on a server, the resources of your website, of the server where your website is hosted, to launch that attack. And it's not the first time, actually, they have multiple proxies. So from their machine, they send commands to your hacked website, which sends commands to another hacked website as a hacked server, and then it sends the command to the actual victim. The resources you're paying for, the server you're paying for, is being used purely for them to hide themselves, basically, as a proxy.
I guess one of the things that I hear sometimes is that people believe that because their website is of a small size or may not be interesting, in inverted commas, that they therefore assume that the hackers won't find it interesting. In other words, it goes a little bit like this. But my website's small, you know, it's about something really niche. Why would the hackers want to come after me? And I think what you've just said speaks to that. It's irrelevant. It's not really a hacker. There isn't an individual doing this. It's an individual at some point who wrote a script which then got downloaded and redistributed 1,000 times over the internet and deployed by 1,000 different people. So you don't need to look for an incentive. The incentive is there all the time. It's not a person deliberately coming after you for a personal vendetta, usually. This is just people trying to gain some sort of bridgehead in the internet, on servers somewhere, so that they can cause mayhem in ways that you cannot even imagine.
Yeah, in fact, even when you say, okay, I don't know, I have a website about a hobby, some old museum somewhere, whatever, we don't accept payments, who would be interested in our website? From the outside, it doesn't look like that, because when actually hackers are trying to find, or malicious users are trying to find vulnerable websites, they're not just browsing one by one. They have automated tools. They scan whole subnets, whole networks, you know, and they don't even know or care whose website it is or how it looks most of the time. Okay, this website has a vulnerability. We can exploit it. So, of course, we can run commands on the operating system or depending, of course, what they want to do. But yeah, as long as they can access it. So yeah, they don't just target your website, just scan whole subnets. So your website happens to be one of them. So yeah, if you have a vulnerability, if you have, I don't know, an outdated plugin, for example, that has an issue and you've never updated it and the vulnerability is there and they can exploit it, then yeah, they don't care whose website it is or how it looks, whatever. It flags, okay, this website, they get a flag, this website vulnerable, exploit the attack, take over, and that's it.
And I guess the other important part in that is that this is not a personal thing. It's very, very, very unlikely, unless you are some kind of nation state actor, that there's going to be people sitting at computers designing software deliberately to get into your machine. This is just people spraying out bots all over the place, looking for vulnerabilities and then stumbling across them randomly and then deploying the things that they've got to exploit those vulnerabilities. So it's not personal, and it very unlikely at the other end of that is a real human being. It's just scripts written who knows where and who knows when.
Exactly. No, in fact, I'm sure like the bigger companies, you know, like Facebook, I'm sure they have a good share of targeted attacks, because when you're so big, I mean, definitely have some haters. But no, let's say the normal websites, the normal hobbyist websites, whatever, which is quite funny, because usually the hobbyist websites are the ones that people think, oh, who will attack my website? But yeah, it's just like another number. So it's not personal, it's nothing personal. And as you said, most of the things are automated. So yeah, there's not one person doing something to you, it's just the whole process. And it's all automated. So yeah, nothing personal indeed, yeah.
Yeah, which doesn't make it any better, unfortunately.
Exactly,
even
yeah.
Though it's not personal. So let's talk about the tech stack, which our WordPress websites are sitting upon, because again, caveat emptor, I know that a lot of the people who are listening to this who are technical, this will be very obvious what we're going to cover, but there's a proportion of the people who are listening to this who may very well not know that there is layers and layers of things making their website possible, and those themselves are vulnerable, even though you may never interact with them. You may only go to your WordPress login over there, type whatever it is that you need to type, save, publish, and then log out again. That might be your only interaction with WordPress, but WordPress doesn't sit in isolation. So what typically is the stack that it's sitting on, and do we need to be concerned about all of the stack, or are there any pieces which are more concerning than others?
It really depends. First of all, your own computer. So if you're accessing your WordPress website, even just to update, your own computer needs to be up to date. So that's part of the tech stack. In regards to the website, it depends. Like if you have a managed hosting where you have access just to this website, the bulk of the work, you still have to take care of some things and updating your software, but the bulk of the work is done by the web host. However, if you have a dedicated server or just any hosting where you just have to install WordPress, then of course, because a typical, let's say you have a dedicated server, you host everything yourself, the typical tech stack, you have the web server, typically a Unix, Linux operating system, then you have the web server, Apache, Nginx, or something similar. You have also PHP, it's a sort of like a framework, the language that WordPress is written in. You have MySQL, the database server. That's the most basic. So you have PHP, Apache, the web server itself, of course, and the database. And then, of course, it depends. Like, if you need to send emails, you're going to the SMTP server and stuff like that. So when it comes to securing that, let's say, that one. To be honest, when you look at the tech stack, software nowadays is quite easy to keep secure. As in, like, as long as you configure it properly and securely, like you read maybe a bit, I don't know, about the best practices. And, of course, keeping it up to date. Software in general is not a big issue. The more time passes, I think the last few years we're seeing a small shift. Because usually it was always, okay, exploiting this issue or exploiting this issue. But most of the cases, vendors are quite responsive when there are issues. The problem in the tech stack is not actually any component in the tech stack, it's the users. As in, like, it could be even you, like, if you forgot to update a plugin, or if you received a spam email or a phishing attack and you clicked on some untrusted link or downloaded something which you don't know what it is, you know? There are so many tools nowadays when it comes to keeping your software up to date. There are so many resources. Like, listen, let's read the best practices on how to set up a secure Apache server. And there are also, of course, services. You can pay people, you can pay professionals who can do these things for you. So the actual tech stack is, I wouldn't say easy because you need knowledge to do it, but yeah, it's relatively easy. If you know what you're doing, you have the tools, you have everything you need to keep it secure. The problem nowadays is more weak passwords, phishing attacks, and stuff like that. Using public Wi-Fi, using unpatched computers, using public computers to access some things. Unfortunately, the user had become the weakest link in the whole chain, you know?
So you've got to really be careful what it is that you're doing, what machine you're using, where you're using that machine, and so on. I'm just wondering if there is, in your mind, any system which you would regard as pretty safe. I'm going to say 100% safe and then immediately withdraw that because I think we all know that's not possible. But is there a position you can get into where you can have done enough? You've raised your guard up so much that you can relax? Or is this more a story of constant vigilance, constant worry, constantly assuming the worst is going to happen tomorrow? Or is it possible to employ the services of a particular, say, SaaS company or a professional who might look over things for you and be entirely happy that, okay, that's now handled by somebody else, I'm entirely safe? Now, I know that 100% is off the table, but can we be confident that our sites are mostly safe if we take the right precautions?
Yes, I think nowadays, with all the tools that there are and all the services, even the web hosts themselves, they really upped their game the last few years, especially the managed ones. As you said, 100% is you're never guaranteed. But yeah, there are so many tools. If you inform yourself and if you implement some best practices, your websites are relatively safe. I mean, you should always take precautionary steps, like, for example, backups. They're very important. So if something happens, you can restore. Test those backups, of course, because many people miss that part. They take backup. Like, have you ever tried to restore it? No. So it is very important because sometimes, of course, it's software as well and it can break. So the restore might not work or something has been corrupted. So that is extremely important. But yeah, from the tech stack point of view, it's pretty much covered. There are a lot of options nowadays. Even like with a simple managed WordPress hosting and installing a plugin or two, you're pretty much covered, let's say. What's important is the best practice and the concept that, listen, security is not one of your. I don't think one should be really paranoid, to be honest, because, as I said, we're in a good position. But it's very important for people to keep in mind, especially as the team grows. Because if you're on your own, it's one thing. It's relatively easy because you know you have exactly full control between you and the web host. You have roughly full control of, and you know what's happening. But as the team starts growing, especially nowadays in the WordPress ecosystem, it's very common to have remote businesses. You don't have full control of your employees, as in like, not the employees themselves, but as in their machines and where they use them and how they use them. So I think what's very important is, of course, to raise awareness, train them, train your team, make them aware that, listen, use your laptop here or have some sort of guidelines and make sure you can use as many possible tools, documentation and training to make sure at least you can take care of that part, which is, in my opinion, is the hardest part to secure because, of course, you don't have full control of the users' machines. That is the most important because, as I said, the tech stack, like, of course, things can happen. But as long as you keep software up to date and stuff like that, unless there's a zero-day exploit and you've been really unlucky, whatever, again, it's never 100% secure, but you're very near that number, you know?
In terms of the tech stack and the maturity of it, do we often get really innovative and unique vulnerabilities in the tech stack that builds a WordPress website? Let's say you've got, I don't know, a server, Apache, Nginx, or whatever it may be. Do we ever find a new novel attack? Does that typically come across, I don't know, once a year, once a decade, something like that? So can we lower our guards a little bit? Or do you find, you're the expert, do you find that there are novel things that are uncovered by security researchers, which have been, maybe they've been exploited for a year or more, but kept very much under the radar, kept quiet? Is the landscape changing? Are there new and novel attacks happening all the time?
Not really in terms of vulnerabilities. We're still playing with the same. For example, SQL injection was discovered in the late 90s. The first decade of 2000, we started discovering other vulnerabilities like cross-site scripting, cross-request forgery, you know, and all the other ones. When you discover a new type of vulnerability, that I would say, of course, that is very innovative. But for the last 10 years, even if you look, there are some websites which keep kind of like an aggregate of the vulnerabilities that are found in plugins. It's always the same. Especially cross-site scripting is very common. By the cross-site scripting, it's also very important to, like, every different types of cross-site scripting, different type of vulnerabilities have different type of severity. So if a plugin has a cross-site scripting vulnerability, it's not necessarily that one should panic, because I'm not saying, okay, just relax, take it easy. But listen, some of the vulnerabilities, for example, are very, very hard or can be exploited in a very particular edge case. So it's very important to keep things up to date. But yeah, in terms of innovation, no, in terms of new vulnerabilities, not much. What is really changing, I think, the way malicious users are getting much smarter in the way they craft their attack. They're still using the same exploits and same issues, exploiting old software, old vulnerabilities, the good old SQL injection, cross-site scripting. But the way they are approaching it, the way they are building, drafting their attack is much more complex. There's a lot of intelligence behind it, like how they use a number of different vulnerabilities to build an attack. First, you send an email if the victim gets the bait, basically, if they click something or whatever. And then if they click, for example, install some malware on the computer, which allows you then, for example, I don't know, some sort of key logger, and then you see what they're doing. Maybe they are connecting to a website and they're uploading something. So we've seen much more complex type of attacks where people are stringing a number of vulnerabilities together to successfully attack some particular target. But in terms of innovation of new type of vulnerabilities, like new ways of exploiting software, we haven't seen much. No, for the last 10 years, it's been pretty much same old kind of thing.
Now, I'm going to throw a spanner in the works here and ask you about AI. It's all the rage at the moment for creating content. Probably people in the WordPress space know that people have been able to create plugins and create all sorts of things around the WordPress space, lots and lots of endeavors in WordPress using AI. And I'm wondering if this has started to become a trend amongst the hackers as well, whether they're using this technology to refine their processes, possibly to go and look at the source code of things like WordPress or Linux kernel or whatever it may be, speeding up the process, finding new novel things. My question really boils down to, does AI and internet security, is that a point of concern, do you think, in the near future?
I think right now, not really. It's still too early, but I think AI is a big changer in general in every industry, every vertical of the internet industry. Having said that, AI is not a human, so it's not necessarily coming up with something innovative. It's still, at the end of the day, it still has some sort of database where it gets information from. The difference is that nowadays, instead of using Google and browsing through search results, trying to find exactly what you need, okay, this website, no, it's not here, click on the other one, go on that page, rather than going through that process, of course, with AI, we've really accelerated that. We've really automated that. So nowadays, like with AI, especially if you know how to ask what you need, you're going to get the answer much quicker. So things that usually would take you, let's assume a malicious user wants to hack something, a target, it used to take them days or weeks maybe to craft something and to think of something original and learn about something, because of course you have to search for everything and read a bit more and try this and try that. With AI, of course, you're accelerating that process. And by accelerating that process, you're achieving much quicker results. And typically also, through AI, not because AI cannot come up with something new, because it's always getting information from what there is. But I'm pretty sure it can, because of this fast process, I'm pretty sure it will lead slowly to also new innovations in every aspect. Content writing, security, both in terms of attack and defense and every aspect of the internet.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I hadn't really thought about that. I was thinking about that from the attacker's side. But of course, the defense side also has the same tools to deploy. And I'm imagining that if you're the vendor of a security product, whether that's a firewall or a plugin or whatever, you're also going to be deploying the same tools to try and mitigate what the adversaries are doing.
The thing is that luckily, both the attacker and the, let's say, the white hat vendor have access to the same tools. So yeah, if you use them wisely. Also, this thing is always a bit of a cat and mouse game. The malicious users do something, the vendors up their game, then they do something, then they up their game and stuff like that.
I want to just turn our attention to a typical WordPress user, perhaps somebody who really doesn't know a great deal about this. They're listening to this podcast because they're curious about WordPress. They've got a site which they run, it's their own. Maybe they've got a couple of sites. They're beginning that journey on creating their own freelance business or something like that. Do you have any guidance as to how often things ought to be done? Is this really a process of you really should be logging in every day, checking for updates, and while you're at it, why not just switch automatic updates for core and all the plugins that you've got on? Or is this more of a, look, once a week is fine. I'm sure there won't be a hard and fast rule, but people who are just beginning their journey with WordPress, they probably do need concrete examples of how they should best handle this.
It really depends on the scale of the business and how much traffic your website is getting and also the number of people working on the website. Because one person or two people from the same room is totally different than being even two people from different locations. And how much the team is security savvy. Not necessarily technical, but at least have some basic understanding. But yeah, in general, let's say a typical startup where you're switching between kind of like a transitioning from a hobby to a part-time. I think as long as you take care of the obvious, install some plugins, add 2FA, add some logs, add a firewall, make sure that you have backups, work with a solid web host. As long as you take care of the basics, you should be pretty much covered. And yes, like everyone else, for example, checking Google Analytics or any type of analytics software for that matter. Yeah, like people are doing it for SEO, but it also helps keeping an eye. Maybe there's a spike of traffic coming from some unusual location. All these things can lead to something. Check your website every day. You know, like, it's very important, for example, especially if you have a very small number of users, you are 2 or 3 users. I mean, like, once a week, maybe you should have some sort of checklist, you know, check how many users there are on your website. Run some file integrity scans, you know, like some basic stuff. Once a week is more than enough at that level. So yes, but what's important, I think, at that stage, especially if you are growing, it's very important to draft policies and follow security best practices when the team is still very small. Why? Because if you are not organized when the team is very small, it will be much harder and you'll have much bigger problems when the team is very big. It will be much harder to implement a change. Like, I don't know, like, you used to do something one way, and after 1 year, the team now is 100 people. It's much more difficult to convince those 100 people, listen, we're going to change this and we're going to start doing it this way. And yeah, that can, of course, irritate people, because people tend to resist change, especially if it affects their productivity or if it's too complicated. So I think what matters is, especially as you're starting, set up some policies, some guidelines, some best practices for yourself. Have some sort of checklist. Yes, once a week or so. You can also do it almost once a month. But again, play it safe. Why not? Spend an hour every week. Have a checklist. Check how many users are there on your website. Check some logs. Check the traffic on the website. You know, check the list of plugins. Check the files. Especially a file integrity monitor can tell you a lot of things, because if there is a file, typically when a website is hacked, there's a file that has changed. A file has been deleted, or a file has been modified, even an actual legitimate file. It has been modified. So yeah, that can tell you a lot. Luckily nowadays, of course, most of these systems configure email alerts. You can configure SMS alerts and stuff like that. So of course, you're automating much and much more, but it's still good to take a look. And also, it's very important, because we, for example, we develop an activity log plugin, and some people are like, okay, what should I look for in the logs? It's very difficult to answer that question, because it really depends on your business. Because it's very important for website owners to understand what's running on their website and how it's being used. And only then you can make informed decisions. Okay, is this log, not just in WordPress, even the web server log, even in analytics, is this traffic normal or not? Because if, for example, you are based in the UK and typically you get all the traffic from Germany, so by seeing a spike from traffic in Germany, that's normal to you. But for someone who's based in the UK but only has UK traffic, a spike of traffic in Germany is a problem for them. So first, what's very important is to understand your website. Have some basic checklists, the most basic stuff, once a week or so. Keep an eye on these things, traffic and logs usually. And also log into the website. Why not? You know, just go to the plugins page. Are these all the plugins that I installed? Are these all the users that I had? That's already a good step. By setting those best practices and those checks once a week, as the team grows, it will be easier to maybe add something new. Because, of course, the team is growing, so you need to add more policies, or you need to add secure something else, you know? So yeah, that's very important. It's very important to keep an eye on things, to check how things are running. But of course, with managed web hosting, especially for WordPress, things, most of these things are almost covered for you. Many web hosts have different packages. Many web hosts nowadays, they have their own kind of like internal monitoring systems as well. We've noticed you have this plugin which is outdated, or we've noticed this. So at least there is a lot going on for you already. And that's why I said even earlier, it's good, of course, to be aware and to be conscious that, listen, these things can happen, but we don't need to be stressed. If you've done your homework, if you do your homework and you follow best practices, you choose a good web host and stuff like that, then you're in a good place.
Yeah, I guess it's a good point to mention that the WordPress ecosystem, given its enormous size and reach in the website creation space, you're in a pretty good spot, because there has been so much effort poured into not only making WordPress secure, but making the update system for plugins and themes trivially easy to switch on. I'm just wondering about that one, actually. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on automatic updating. Personally, I've, in most of the places where it's possible, I have switched that on and have had no negative consequences. You know, none of the plugin updates have destroyed anything in ways which would make me want to switch that off. But that is an option which I know that a lot of people don't make use of, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that. So in the WordPress admin, it's possible to automate the whole process of updating. It'll just do it on a regular cycle. If it knows there's a WordPress plugin update, it'll just do it for you, and hopefully everything will work out. And obviously now we've got a safe mode built into WordPress not that long ago. So let's just talk about that quickly. What do you think about automatically updating everything when possible?
Speaking about ourselves, we have automatic updates on minor version updates, like 4.0.1, 4.0.2. We allow that. Because, yeah, in most cases, usually these updates are just small bug fixes here and there. the chances of something breaking, especially with a plugin update, is with major version changes, because of course the vendor has implemented a new feature or drastically changed a feature and stuff like that. Of course, for the better, but especially for vendors, it's very difficult. Let's say you have a plugin and it's installed onto 100,000 websites. It's very difficult to simulate all those 100,000 websites and simulate the upgrade. So of course, we try our best to do as much as we can, to test as much as we can in different scenarios, but it's impossible. So in terms of auto updates for us, and which is something I recommend, I would definitely enable them for minor version updates. In regards to major version upgrades, nowadays, again, most hosting providers have the staging websites. Just run it on the staging website. Literally, it only takes 10 minutes. Run it on the staging website. Check the area on the website that is affected by that plugin. I don't know if it's an SEO plugin, for example. You check that the headers are still loading or the metadata is still loading. Or if, I don't know, it's a tables plugin, you check that the tables are still loading properly. And yeah, if it works, update the live site as soon as possible. WordPress itself, of course, as soon as you log into the dashboard and you go to the plugins pages, you have that, even you don't need to go to the plugins pages, you have that icon that you have updates. So it's very difficult to miss updates. So that's great. But even if, let's say, you're not logging into our website on a daily basis, there are many services. Every vendor, usually, they have their own changelog. You can subscribe to their newsletter. So yeah, whenever there's an update, you'll get an email or some sort of notification. So it's very important, if you're not logging into our website every day to see when there are updates, at least subscribe to the vendor's newsletter or builds updates or something. So at least you get an email that, listen, we've released an update, especially if it's a major update. If you have, of course, the automatic updates for minor version upgrades, especially if you have a big website, like an e-commerce website, you can have a good number of plugins, tens of plugins. At least you don't have to do almost daily updates. For the major version updates, if it's a relatively small website, you might get on with enabling automatic updates on that as well. But yeah, do it on a staging website. It literally takes a few minutes. Just update the plugin on the staging, run a quick test, 15 minutes maximum, and then update on the live website. So yeah, definitely.
It's also the kind of thing that once you've done it a few times, it becomes kind of muscle memory, and you can do that staging to updating plugin to, you can do that very trivially quickly and get on with your day if that's not the
Indeed.
Main
yeah.
part of yeah. your business. Just one last question. You talked earlier about members of staff and what have you. I'm just wondering if you've got any guidance, again, possibly for the more inexperienced WordPress user, about the kind of roles that you might assign to people in WordPress. Obviously, if you are giving everybody the administrator role, you may well find yourself in a bit of trouble. And also about the nature of cleansing out the users that you've got on your WordPress website on a regular basis. So, you know, if you've got a big team and you're constantly churning through staff, that's probably something you want to be thinking about as well, because that's an attack that you really can't avoid if you don't make the effort. You know, if you've given somebody an administrator account and they've got bona fide access to get into the website and you don't revoke it, or you've given them too many permissions and they then get fired and, you know, they fall out with you, there could be problems afoot there.
Yeah, indeed. Definitely, one shouldn't give admin roles, assign the admin role to everyone. In fact, as a best practice, I would say have an admin account, really difficult to use, and that should only be used by you and only as backup, because even you, as a website administrator, you don't need admin access whenever you log into the website. If most of your work is still updating some posts or maybe changing something from the team. So no, admin roles shouldn't be used that often. WordPress has a number of built-in roles. It depends, again, on the nature of the website, what you're doing with it. For some people, those roles work. But yeah, the fact that there's this technology of roles is already good, because there are also a number of plugins which you can use to create different types of roles to assign multiple roles to users. And most plugins nowadays, they either create their own roles on your WordPress website, or they have different types of functions where you can, okay, like literally some plugins, you can say, okay, I created a new role for them and I want these people to do only these type of things on this plugin. So the role control and what people can do and cannot do, especially when you use a third-party plugin to create your own custom roles and to assign different privileges, is very granular. Definitely no admin access for no people, quite frankly. But yeah, the rest, I definitely recommend using some sort of custom role editor so you can create your own custom roles as well if the default ones don't work for you. We always talk about the principle of least privilege. I was a systems engineer when I used to work for other companies, and the easiest way, I was like, yeah, give them admin access because it will work for sure. Of course. Unfortunately, it's a very common practice, but no, the reality is you should, yes, start with the least possible. And if they don't work, see what else they need. Okay, what else do you need? I need to access this page from this plugin. And check, contact the vendor from this plugin. Listen, do you have specific privileges for this, or do we need this? Do we need this? And build slowly. Yes, I understand that it hinders the productivity, kind of slows down things, but it only slows down things for a day or two. or give them maybe a bit more access for a day or two until you check with the vendor and then reverse that access. So always give the least possible. It's also a question like of user accountability. Some compliance bodies actually have regulations about this. If someone shouldn't be seeing certain customer data, regardless if you trust them or not, they shouldn't be seeing it. Why are you giving them access kind of thing? So it's very important to live by the kind of like principle of least privilege when it comes to users. Give them the least possible. Even for them, especially if they're not tech savvy. This doesn't have to do with someone being malicious or even if they make a mistake. At least they make a mistake within their environment, their privileges, not a bigger mistake. ROSE definitely should be used. And yeah, there are a lot of plugins. We're lucky because there are a lot of plugins which allow you to create your own custom ROSE, assign different privileges for ROSE and stuff like that. Definitely. ROSE are definitely things that should be used.
This is a topic that we could probably talk about for days.
Yeah, ROSE on their own. Yes, yes.
And more broadly about WordPress in general, you know, should we keep the REST API on and are there a bunch of things that you would switch off by default? But unfortunately, we're kind of running out of time. So I'm going to leave those questions possibly for another episode. Or another way of getting the answer might be if people want to contact you, Robert, directly, where can you be found? Do you hang out on social? Is there an email address that you prefer to mention? Where can we best find you, Robert?
Yes, our website is wpysecurity.com, but as I said, we are rebranding, so we are announcing the new name at WordCamp Europe. The new website will be melapress.com, M-E-L-A-press.com, melapress.com. So yeah, my email is very simple, robert@melapress.com or @wpysecurity. I'm also on Twitter and stuff like that, but yeah, I think email is definitely where I'm the most efficient.
Thank you very much, Robert. I really appreciate joining us on the podcast today. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.